passport, check. Euros, check. Train ticket, check.
Oh no, I forgot the Flight Free podcast.
Check in with the Flight Free podcast. Imagine where we can take you. Don't forget to carry us in your pocket for destination inspiration.
Hello and welcome to the Flight Free podcast. I'm Lou and I'll be checking you in today as we discuss being flight free across the generations. Here at Flight Free UK, we love to see such a range of ages taking pledges on our website. Today we have three lovely guests, each giving a different perspective on reducing flying and responding to the climate crisis with positive actions. Before we meet our brilliant guests, let's hear this month's Flight Free Fact.
Flight Free Fact.
According to a study by British Airways, the average youngster takes their first flight when they are 4 years old. Today's generation are taking flight much earlier than their parents did, and by the age of 10, the average child will have travelled to 4 different countries. What is also interesting to know is that almost half of parents find travelling with children stressful. Perhaps avoiding the unnecessary stress of airport queues and confined space on board an aircraft could be replaced with the amazing views provided by travelling on a train. Our first guest today is Sue Hampton. Do you want to say hello, Sue, and a little bit about yourself?
Hello. Yes, I'm a grandma. I'm an author. I used to be a primary school teacher. And I'm a climate activist with Extinction Rebellion, Just Stop Oil, Christian Climate Action, etc. And I live in Hertfordshire, a place called Berkhamsted.
Our second guest we have today is Benjamin. Do you want to say hello and a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Benjamin and I'm 8 years old, so I've not had that much time in the world. I go to school, yeah, and I love Harry Potter. Yeah, I love animals as well. And just the environment.
And our last guest today is Sarah. Hello, Sarah. How are you today? Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm well, thank you. I'm Sarah. I'm Benjamin's mum. I work for a social justice organisation where we kind of create research and use it to lobby governments and try and influence them. Less of sort of going out and kind of protesting, but more kind of looking at our like daily lives and how to have less impact on the planet and trying to help as much as we can, really.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, lovely to meet you all. So let's have a little chat about what inspired you to take action against the climate emergency.
It depends what you mean by action, doesn't it? Because for a long time I was vegetarian, then I became vegan. For a long time I thought that flying was okay because, you know, I was saving on all those emissions in my diet. And I used to sign petitions and go on marches and write to my MP and so on. And then I realised that none of that was enough. And one of the changes I made, which was 15 years ago now, was that I stopped flying. I just decided that was it. Even once a year was too much. And I'm now, I do have a criminal record for completely peaceful climate activism in many forms. When I first held my eldest grandchild in my arms, and he's only just 4, it was overwhelming to me that the mixed feelings that I had, because on the one hand there was this absolute joy and rush of, you know, protective love, and on the other hand there was fear about the world that he's been born into. So as a grandma, I have to do everything I can for my grandchildren, but also for all the world's children, and particularly the children who are in the global south and are suffering most, and, you know, these are in countries that have done the least to contribute to the problem. So I'm always very mindful, not just of my own grandchildren, but all the children everywhere.
That's a wonderful answer, thank you. Benjamin, would you like to talk about What inspired you to take action against the climate crisis?
I think it was my fifth birthday. I adopted koalas, and ever since then I've just cared about animals and the environment. I don't know why, but I've just started to care loads more. I think it's partly because of my parents. I think they seem to care a lot more as well.
Yeah, thank you for telling us about that. So I think you've come from it from a perspective of loving animals and wanting to save the planet for the animals as well as your family. And it's nice that your parents have inspired you to do that with the things they do as well. Do you talk to your friends about it?
Yeah, I'd say we planned a presentation about like palm oil and orangutans. They chopped down the rainforest trees, which suck up a lot of carbon dioxide.
So we did a presentation to year five, telling them about the rainforest and telling them about palm oil and where palm oil, like, it comes in all of our food and our shampoo and things, and the impact that that has on the orangutans, but then also on us.
Mm.
I wish I was there to see it. I'd have learnt a lot, it sounds like. And Sarah, would you like to tell us what's inspired you to take action against the climate crisis?
I think, so for all the reasons that, you know, Sue's just mentioned, but sort of taking a different kind of angle, I think about, the economy and our way of life that the economy kind of relies on. It's quite difficult to feel like it's a meaningful life. So we buy lots of things which make us like really happy in the moment. And we kind of know this deep down, and there's loads of research around it. We don't even need to do research around it, but it doesn't actually sustain kind of happiness. So for me, it's sort of every action has a positive or a negative impact. So you can always choose to make that a positive one or a negative one. And if everyone did that, then the cumulative effect would be much bigger. And yeah, definitely when you know, we've got to think about the legacy that we're leaving for our children. Do you want to look back and say, I tried my best, you know, I did my best, I played a part in trying to make, you know, the future better for you? Or do you just want to say, well, it felt too big and too overwhelming? So in a way, sort of living this life and trying to adapt and change things. And actually, it's not massive changes. It's not a massive detriment to your life. You know, there's lots of good things about kind of slowing down and having a different way of life. It's really positive, actually. And I think that's what we kind of need to do. We need to sort of paint a picture of like this can be a really positive change for good. You know, the mental health crisis we've got on our hands as well, it just kind of goes to show, like, actually this current way of life isn't making us as humans happy, and it's killing the planet as well. So it's a total no-brainer, really. So it's a bit of a different angle of actually, it just makes me feel like I'm living my life in a more meaningful way.
Yeah, that's such a lovely answer. That's actually similar to what I wrote when I took my pledge, because I read the book by Matt Haig, Notes on a Nervous Planet. That sort of speaks to that similar idea of, you know, being happy with a lot less and finding happiness within rather than constantly grabbing for more and that fast-paced world that we live in. So you have made lots of changes in your life in response to the climate crisis, some much bigger than others, and I'd love to hear about them and whether it has been challenging for you to alter your life in such a way.
Well, I think the two really big ones are being vegan and not flying. I try to shop zero waste, and it gives me such pleasure to take back the glass bottle of milk and refill it, and to take my tubs and get most of the food I need that way without having any plastic involved at all. I buy clothes now from charity shops. As I said earlier, I have become an activist, so that means direct action, obviously non-violent direct action, and that's taken many forms. So I have engaged in performative action, such as being outside Barclays Bank and getting covered in fake oil. I have also done arrestable stuff, including recently I had a spell in prison because I broke the injunction at Kingsbury Oil Terminal, which is the biggest in the country, and Warwickshire Council have taken out an injunction to protect the interests of the oil companies and to limit the possibility of peaceful protest. anyone who breaks that injunction goes immediately in front of a magistrate and so on. So I really want to say that not flying has only ever felt good. I have never, ever once thought, oh, do you know, I wish I hadn't made that pledge, because before Flight Free UK, you know, as I say, 15 years ago, I decided I wasn't going to fly. I never thought, oh, why did I make that decision? Should I go back on it just once? Once you realise the damage that something you're doing is doing to vulnerable people who have never flown, then you just can't do it again. And somebody once said, actually, when you fly, you kill people. And I said that to my daughter years ago, and she sort of rolled her eyes and thought it was very extreme. And I thought maybe, you know, I had chosen my words injudiciously. But actually, you know, when entitled people in the global north fly, especially, you know, for no good reason, we are killing people in the global south. And it's as straightforward as that for me.
Thank you for that answer. It's really nice to hear that you take so much enjoyment and pride in these actions, because I think often people see them as a chore or see it as something to give up and in a negative light. But it's wonderful to hear you speak about it in such a positive light and that feeling of good that it brings when you take those actions. Benjamin, even though you are only 8, and as you said, you not have much time in the world yet, you have still been taking some really great actions. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah, I use my voice, and like I said earlier, a couple of weeks ago, we did a presentation to the Year 5s, and I've also got a stop motion video on my YouTube account. About, like, well, this one's more about plastic, but I try and use my voice about why we should care and things. I think my next environmental one will be about, like, climate change. For my birthday, like I'd been doing for the last few years, I asked my friends if instead of presents for my birthday party, I could have money to put towards adopting orangutans.
That's amazing. What's so great about that is when you set up a birthday fundraiser, all your friends can see what is so important to you. And I think that's such a nice idea. So well done for doing that. And the idea of using your voice is lovely, because your voice is important, especially as a young person. And I think you'll be inspiring lots of your friends to do similar things and have conversations with them about similar things. Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about your actions?
I think Benjamin is like one of the things that we're doing, you know, raising someone who's really like aware of it. And actually children have a massive impact on the environment. So we had a choice to have a child, but we're doing our best to help him be aware. And hopefully, you know, when he grows up, he will also be a contributor towards good. And pre-lockdown, we'd taken and this is how I'd connected with you. We'd done a train trip across Europe, which again was like, he was 5 years old at the time, and it was like the most fun trip. Like, it was one of our best like trips. And again, it's like, how do we highlight, you know, how much fun the journey is as well as kind of like the destination. So yeah, just, you know, there's other things as well, but again, it's just trying to, yeah, there's definitely a thing about like the economy, what the economy is based on, and we all have to kind of play a part in helping that shift. We can say as much as we like, and you know, it's absolutely right, governments have to act, but we can choose to remain silent. And obviously, Sue, you're doing an amazing job of kind of going out there and not being silent, or you can choose to write to your MP. You can choose to, that every single thing that we do is a choice, and you can choose to have a positive impact or a negative impact. So just through our daily living, I think we're constantly trying to, yeah, find ways of kind of just living a different life and getting joy out of that different way of life. And actually, it is very joyful, because it is way more meaningful.
I love that. It's definitely more joyful to live that meaningful life and thinking about each action that you take. for you, Sue, do you see, you know, retirees going on cruises and seeing the world, and or very often they're flying rather than traveling by train, but yet they have maybe the luxury of time. Maybe the train travel is seen as too adventurous. It would be really interesting to hear your perspective on that.
Yes, I found it quite frustrating and a bit depressing, to be honest, that people of my generation do seem, in this country at least, to feel that now that they have the time, they deserve to fly around the world and explore it that way. And I think the thing is, I don't think it's particularly a decision or a choice. I think they're just doing what everybody does. It's so completely normal. And the majority of people still don't associate flying with damage to the earth or damage to the earth's peoples and animals. They just see it as part of what they do. And I've noticed on quiz shows, you know, something like Pointless, when I dread it actually, because when the contestants get asked how they're going to spend the money if they win, honestly, 9 times out of 10, they say they're going to fly somewhere. And that's just because we have come to think, oh, suddenly we've got a lot of money. What will I do? Oh, I'll fly somewhere far away, somewhere exotic, and I'll lie in the sun and I'll have cocktails by the pool and so on. And that's just become our idea of what a treat, what luxury is for us. So I do think that retired people take a lot of flights, and I don't know what would stop them. I would like to think that information, understanding would make that difference, because as I say, I really don't think most people understand the cost of it, the carbon cost of it, the human cost of it. But I also do think that when you're older, train travel does perhaps seem a little daunting because it's a bit more physical, isn't it? And it doesn't seem as easy as just turning up, getting on a plane, and there you are, you arrive. But I think if prices changed as well, I think if it was cheaper to go by train, that would inevitably make a big difference. So I think there are several things that need to change, but I think the number one is the media, because the media only ever present flying as an exciting, glamorous thing that we all want to do. So until that is undermined by the scientific reality and until people understand that, they're going to continue with a habit that they just feel is one of the best parts of their life. We have had some fantastic holidays since we stopped flying. And it's like Sarah was saying about joy and just a different way of living, that actually there is great joy in the smallest things and the things that don't cost anything and the things that are most connected to the natural world. Things that are connected to the love that we feel for each other and for the trees and, you know, the beauty of the earth and so on. These things are a much deeper joy than that transient pleasure you get from, you know, going to a hot country, lying on a beach, and then showing people the photographs and putting it on Facebook and saying having a lovely time and everybody's envious. But that's not actually happiness.
Thank you. I think you're right. And we need to change the norm. And that often does come from, you know, media is so influential. I think, like you said, more information and more understanding. If people are willing to take in that information, that would be really helpful. Benjamin, would you like to tell us what you think would help people your age and in your year group? What would help them take positive actions like you?
Well, it's actually quite hard for children because It's more like their parents' choices, like where they go and how they go. But they can still put their choice in because, so like, children can tell other children, and grown-ups as well, obviously, how fun train journeys are. If they do that, then the children might be inspired to go on a train or bus journey, like for a holiday, and they might ask their parents if they can do that instead of flying.
What would you tell other children about the train trip that we did to Austria?
So it's really fun because we've got a station right by our doorstep. It was quite simple. So we got cross gates to main Leeds station and then right down to London, and then we got the Eurostar under the English Channel without even having water around you, and we were under the water. We went to Belgium and Brussels, and we had some amazing Belgium chocolate and things there. And then we got the train to Frankfurt. Then we went to Munich from Frankfurt. We had a few days in Munich. We had a cycle, and I got my... It was sort of like my own little bike, but it was connected to one of my parents' bikes, and we had races against each other and stuff.
And then what happened when we got to Austria?
We went into the valley by train.
There was a train station and a bus stop where they came on time. You'd get on, and then we'd go to the mountains, bottom of the mountains, and then what would we get on?
We'd get on a cable car.
To go up the mountain.
Yeah, and there was this really cool, playground called Victim Slosh. It's different to what you're used to, in a good way. It's because you're not used to doing that. I took my Lego, a bag with loads of piece of paper, scissors, pens, pencils, and stuff that I could cut up and stick together and make things with, and lollipop sticks and all sorts.
And that's the thing, right? Like, for us, we're like, oh, it's really boring. Like, we think of trains as being, we don't think of it as an exciting thing as an adult, right? Like, because we just get on it all the time, and we forget how exciting it is for kids, especially, I mean, still him, he's very excited. We got on a bus the other day and he was just, it's like, I'm so excited about going on the bus. And I'm like, really? But they love it. So I think we forget as well as adults, like the joy and the excitement that you have as a child for public forms of transport. But also, yeah, it was really, you know, it's very relaxing because you can take all of that stuff. You can play games as a family together, and that's really special time. And you're watching the world go by. You're able to kind of interact and chat with people in the country. So you take part in a bit of like the actual country's life. Benjamin loves chatting to people. Like we'll learn a little bit of the language and he'll be like trying to chat away and stuff. And you get those interactions. So it's a very different type of holiday to where you just sort of jet somewhere, you're there, and then you don't even get a sense of what the country is. You're sort of just going for like the hot weather or whatever. Again, it's a deeper, more meaningful kind of experience, and it's much being able to kind of like, right, so what, like, find out which platform we need to go to. You can make all of that really fun. It's really educational for them as well, and it's very exciting. It's like, right, like, look at the signs, like, look for the times. And we think of, as adults, this is all really boring stuff, but for kids, it's dead exciting. So it's that point of slowing. Yes, it's slower, but it's more fun, and it's part of the holiday. It's not like just a means of getting to the holiday. It really is very much a part of the holiday, which remains in your mind. And it's coming back to that point of like, what kind of life do we want to have? Like slowing things down and experiencing more through the slowing down of it, rather than it being so like fast all the time. And it goes in a blur, but like the slowing down and just being able to take things in more. So sitting and seeing the country as you're traveling through, you know, various different countries. We went through France, Belgium, Germany, and then on to Austria. You know, you're seeing all that scenery around you, and you can sit and you can listen to music, and it's much less stressful than like loads of passports and like security checks and like, not, you know, will you get your bags back at the end of this? Like all of that kind of thing. So it's just a different way of life and of being, which is a really positive.
That sounded so incredible. And I'm hoping I'm invited on the next one, because I would like to try those chocolates in Belgium, please. Okay, Sue, would you like to tell us about an amazing trip that you've had without flying?
Yeah, I can't compete with that because the thing is, my husband isn't well enough, but we do things like we go to Glasgow for a few nights, or we've been to Edinburgh, or we've been to York, places like that that have tremendous history, that have a lot of culture, and places where, you know, we can use a bus to get around the city. And we went to our latest holiday was just a few days in York. We walked around the city walls. We went to the Minster, which is awe-inspiring. And we just loved walking along the river from the B&B where we were staying into the centre of York. Just a short walk, but so beautiful. And I don't think I could have enjoyed, you know, Ibiza or Mauritius or Bali or any of these places any more than I enjoyed York. And so I would encourage people to explore the beauty of this country. Not just cities, but there are places you can get to by train and, you know, use as a starting point for a walking holiday. You know, it doesn't just have to be walking around cities. So yeah, it's a bit different when you're old and not particularly robust anymore, but the train is a fantastic way of enjoying the journey. I mean, just going to Scotland from down south where I live is incredible. You know, I was looking out of the window the whole time. Other people were on their devices and I was just looking out of the window because there is the history of this country, you know, in front of your very eyes. There is the geography, there is the culture, the wildlife to some extent as well. And it's just fascinating. So I think people miss a lot, actually, when they feel they have to go off to another country and they're just flying above it. Mostly they're just seeing clouds. You get a greater sense of this country that is home.
Yeah, what Sue mentioned there, there's this word adventure. And actually, I think we think of adventure as being far-flung places, and it can be. But actually, I think if there's one thing that lockdown taught us was you can have adventure on your doorstep. To be happy, we don't need a huge kind of amount. And I think maybe that's, you know, in terms of trying to encourage others, maybe it seems like it's a big fear because we're going to be giving up a lot. But actually, the things that we'll be giving up, they're not the things that make you deeply happy. So it's not really a massive giving up. It's just it's a finding joy and meaning in. So yeah, just about seeking the joy in a smaller kind of way.
Thank you so much. I mean, what a wonderful way to see the world. And I really hope that this inspires more people to do the same. Thank you all so much for your contributions today. I've really enjoyed this chat and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.
Thanks, Louise.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sue.
Bye. Lots of love.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Just before we wrap up today's episode, let's have our Destination of the Month.
Destination of the Month.
As we heard from Benjamin, there are some amazing places that you can get to via train in Europe, and we've chosen Rosenthal in Austria, which can be reached by taking the Eurostar from London to Amsterdam, and then by train and bus through Germany, which is, of course, all part of the adventure. If you are after something closer to home, we are also recommending, yes, a double Destination of the Month special, the wonderful city of York, as spoken about by Sue, which is easily accessed by train. Thanks so much to our wonderful guests for joining us this month, and thanks to you for joining us. We hope that you're inspired to make 2022 your year of being flight-free. You can sign up at flightfree.co.uk and don't forget to share the pledge with your friends and family to help us spread the word. Next month, we'll be discussing climate conversations and how to navigate them effectively with the people we know. See you then! We hope you enjoyed your journey with the Flight Free podcast. Download the full series on the podcast page of our website and join us again next month for more inspirational stories and grounded adventures. You can find out more information and inspiration at flightfree.co.uk. Until next time, stay safe and stay grounded.